welcome up Miss Jordana. I'm like, I hope she is here. Jordan Sundberg is a good friend of mine, and also, and I say this all the time, she's two of my favorite things. She's absolutely my favorite graphic designer and artist. I honestly love her art. And also, she's my favorite preacher. And so Jordan has the privilege and the honor of being our first female preacher at the Cloquet Vineyard. And so we, yeah, it's awesome. Big deal.
That's cool.
I just want to say, you are my favorite. You are my favorite. You know, at the Cloquet Vineyard, we believe that when we say everybody gets to play, we really mean that. That we believe that the Bible teaches us that men and women can lead in exactly who God made them to be to their fullest potential. So I'm super pumped. Please give a round of applause for my favorite artist.
Oh my God. Thank you. I feel really, really honored to be here. I think that what's happening here is beyond good. My husband and I talk about just, we cannot believe the goodness that's happening here, and we're so happy for the people who are here and how this started and what's going on. And actually, when I really think about you guys, I often get teary-eyed, because this isn't just an ordinary weekend meeting. It's not just a place to listen to a dumb speech and get your kind of weekend dose of God, or, you know, a place for your kids to receive some sort of moral lesson. I get teary-eyed because what is happening here allows space and time and invitation for something that we've always been made to experience. And sometimes we go our whole lives without experiencing it. And the word that I'm talking about is this weird Greek word. It's pronounced allelon. And this word was found in a letter that Paul wrote to a church 2,000 years ago in Corinthians. And what that word means is one anothering. It's community at a total different level. It's unusual unity and togetherness. It's about being about the other in a really, really radical way. And it's like the level of care and sacrifice and commitment and involvement in each other's lives, it's way up here. Oh, I think that's my daughter. Oh, no. I love you. Oh, man. Okay. Back to the speech. So this thing, this allelon, you guys want to say it with me? Allelon. It's kind of a weird word, but he uses this, and it's community with wild abandon, one anothering. Now, the mistake we make when we get together in a church like this is to either think that our standard for community and one anothering, it's just so low that we settle for not really getting to know each other, for having just a friendly environment, a place that feels pleasant and comfortable, but it never gets that nitty-gritty, dirty, our lives don't get messy together, we're not doing this one-anothering thing. Or we expect someone else to make it happen, the leaders or the worship team, but we can just kind of hang it on the outsides and see if maybe it happens. Or we think we can make it happen ourselves, that if we just are pleasant enough to each other and say kind of churchy things or godly things, then that will be good community. But we all know inevitably in community something or someone says something or does something that's offensive or hurtful. And we all run into that place where we meet resistance and wanting to leave and wanting to speak negatively back to that person or whatever, and it's hard to do this allelon thing truly and deeply, because the source for it is way, way, way beyond ourselves and way beyond anything we can muster or make happen, and it's way better than what we often settle for. So what I want to talk about today is the source of this allelon and how it has been moving this unstoppable force all throughout history, generation after generation, and it's been inviting and influencing people and inviting people to share this life with God in a really radical way. And right now, you guys, in this room, that same supernatural love is moving through this room right now, inviting this church, Cloquet Vineyard, to a radical community, one that could look like a piece of heaven right here, right now, just by the way that we do life together. So I think the very best way to go about this is to take hold of this and understand this passionate force by looking at the whole story. And so as we do that, I think you're going to begin to see God looking directly at you and actually inviting you directly and asking you to come in on this really wonderful picture of community he has. Because really, he wants to bring us to life with the community that he has. Okay, so we're going to start at the very beginning. And the very beginning isn't just at the cross or when sweet baby Jesus got squeezed out in the barn. The very beginning starts with God himself. You know, is this a little distracting for you guys? It sounds like maybe I'm really breathy. I'll just move it a little bit. Okay. So the story begins with God himself as the Trinity. You know, the whole three-in-one thing. There's God the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. And they've always existed for all time as one being together. And they say that they're love itself. And let me introduce you to these guys, because who God is in the Trinity is the essence of who he's calling us to be. 1 John 4 says that God is love. Not just a loving God or a lovely God, but love itself. And I've heard the Trinity described as God, the lover, the Father, the Son, his beloved, and the love that is constantly going between them is the Spirit. And the three of them, they're just this trio that's utterly full of love for each other. And love is just central. And also, at the center of them is relationship, because you can't be full of love without wanting to love something or somebody. And so they're just constantly loving each other. And they have this constant exchange going on. And of course, there's more than love going on. There's just this brimming generosity. They have everything. They have no needs at all. And they just constantly give of themselves to each other. And they have happiness because they love seeing the one that they love receive love. So there's joy and happiness going on. And there's just on and on and on, lifting each other up. And there's never subordination or domination of the other because they simply won't put up with it. They're all about laying down themselves for each other, love, love, love around this circle. And in fact, some pieces of art show the Trinity laughing because they're so full of love that they can't contain themselves. They're erupting in laughter, seeing the joy and goodness of their togetherness. And as they fully give of themselves to each other, never lacking, at the same time not holding back, God is the happiest being in the universe. And he is the master at this allelon thing, this one anothering. He is the source of it. And I want you to imagine God like this for just a little bit. Because for some reason, we imagine God just not happy. It's hard to imagine God laughing. We picture him stern or a little distant or maybe kind of judging in the corner or kind of cold, maybe a little afraid to approach him. So I want you to imagine God like this. This God who's just brimming with joy. And there he is. Imagine this. Sitting at a table. He's got this authentic smile. He's maybe chuckling a little bit. He has just this, he's oozing magnetic, tremendous warmth. You just want to be next to him. And he looks you in the eye. He pulls out a chair. And he says, come join us. Because that's basically what he does. A German philosopher, Meister Eckhart, born in the 13th century, described the source of human life like this. Do you want to know what goes on in the core of the Trinity? I'll tell you. In the core of the Trinity, the Father laughs and gives birth to the Son. The Son laughs back at the Father and gives birth to the Spirit. And the whole Trinity laughs and gives birth to us. Out of just their overflowing joy and love for each other, they create us. They pour themselves into the very beings they create. And they say, let's create this place that will host our goodness and creativity and love, where our generous love will be the way of their life. And we'll create amazing animals and bodies of water and vast majestic beauty, and it will all reflect us. And they do, and it's wonderful. And we can still see it outside of our windows and in our backyards, and we see that it's wonderful. And then they get to creating people. And the most important part of their creation. And instead of just making us like they made everything else, Genesis says that God created a man and did something really strange to him. He breathed into him. Now, this is an interesting part of the story, because to us, breathing into someone is like mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on a water slide. We don't breathe into each other unless they gotta breathe, they gotta survive. But living in the Bible's time, we would have understood that this breathing into people is a big deal. And other cultures and other religions, ancient religions, even current religions, know what this whole breathing into people thing means. Because in ancient religions and cultures, and some still today, they had this set up that people would come and worship in a temple. And there would be these statues of gods in a temple. And when new temples were built and new statues were built, they believed that the god they wanted in their temple was somewhere out in the sky, and they needed to get that god out of the sky and into their statue so they could come to the temple and actually worship him right there. So the people would bring these priests in, and the priests would come and undergo this thing called a spiration ceremony or a breathing ceremony. And the idea was that they'd come in, these priests, and among other things, they would breathe into the nose and mouth of the statue. And they would do this in their priestly way, and they believed that as they did this, the god would come out of the atmosphere and actually live in this statue. And then the people of the community would come, and they would visit the statue and pray to the statue and give offerings to it, because they believed that there was actually a spirit right there in it. Now here's our God. On the sixth day of creating, he says, I'm not going to create a statue for myself to live in. I'm going to create people, and I will live in them. My love will live in them, and I am going to breathe it into them. I will do my own breathing ceremony. And I will create them male and female, and they're going to look and act and speak like us. They'll be full of our love. They'll be joyful. They'll be utterly generous, because my spirit will be breathed into them. And everything the Son and Spirit and I are about will be extended all the way into these people. And they will have alelon. They will be together like we're together. They will have community like us. And this is pretty amazing. Because instead of creating some giant statue on a mountain that we have to go worship and beg for drops of love from, instead of having this strange God that's in some weird metal or wooden form that we have to hope hears our prayers, or we have to, you know, superstitiously rub its toes or visit it or wonder if we've visited enough, he actually puts himself into the people he creates. So they're the kind of people who have his presence in them. And the deal with having him in us means that we can have his supernatural goodness to say and do good things and take care of the world just like he would, just like he operates, and be together with other humans just like they are together, with unbridled care and joy and sacrifice for each other, and not live with our shame and self-protection and fear of each other. And then God tells the people he creates in Genesis, it's all mine. This whole earth, all of it, and I love it all. And you get to be the ones who love it and love each other and take care of each other and the earth just like I do, just like I would. And I will be about you, and you'll be about me, so that everything I have will overflow in you, and you can do it. It's going to be great. And then here's something crazy. Even though the first human was created eons ago, God said the very same thing to us. There you were, screaming in that hospital room or in your parents' bed or in the back seat of a taxi with cheesy goop on your eyes. And there he was whispering to you, "Welcome to the world. Everything you see is mine. All of it. I love it all. All the animals you're going to get to meet, the mountains, the water. I made it all and I love it all. And you get to be one who takes care of it just like I do. And you get to be one who will love people just like I do. Trust me with your life. I am for you, and my love will provide everything you need to do it all." Sometimes when I'm talking to our feisty little daughter, who's just barely one, I tell her, "Celia, you were made to do good. You were made for God's goodness to live in you and for you to live in his goodness and to see goodness come out of you in the world. Can you believe it, Celia?" And then she usually pulls out my eyelashes or pulls my hair. Someday she'll get it, I hope. But this whole thing, this says something very important to us about the access of God in our lives. Because he's not set us up to be people who must grovel for something from him, or cross our fingers hoping that he hears us, or do a bunch of good things to try to sway him into not punishing us, or trying to get him to do us a favor, to get us that job we want, or to get our adult kids to go to church, or to heal that thing that we are ailing from. What this is saying is that he is present, not just in the room present, but his life wants to move in us. It is moving in us. And that what he wants to do is to take care of us with the same love and joy and sacrifice that he's always had going on. It's how he made for us to live. How does that confront us? My mom and I were talking, and she's always had this fear that was trained into her probably when she was a little girl that believes that any moment she could mess up and all of the good things that she has and hopes for, family, grandkids, her health, even dreams of doing things like building a house or going on vacations to places, that at any moment, if she were to mess up, God would just snatch it all away, just to punish her. And sometimes it puts her on eggshells with God, wondering, have I upset him? Have I done enough to, you know, cover up the things, the mistakes that I made in the past? But the setup with God and the way that he begins humanity is a whole different orientation. What would it look like in times of us feeling like we're bad or afraid of what God's thinking of us, we're scared about life, or even when we feel tempted to manipulate God into doing things for us, things that we want? What if instead we practice receiving from him, his love, just like the Father, Son, and Spirit do, participating in his allelon, his one anothering? What would it be like if we were completely aware through all the hours of the day how much pleasure God has over us as his kids, his creation that he loves? We have to practice engaging in that, don't we? And each of us are invited to become more and more in tune with that in our lives. And it can happen in small ways. Maybe it's at the end of the day, sitting with a cup of tea and just taking 10 minutes to reflect through the day and just remembering the small, maybe even very small, or maybe big things that you saw joy and delight happening throughout the day, that you encountered joy and delight, and making the connection that in those moments of joy and delight, that was God loving you, that there he was, inviting you into his love. Or maybe it's going and taking a walk by the river and just stopping and listening to the birds and the water and realizing this is God's creation that he loves. All this beauty, all this joy, all this goodness, he loves this so much. And then realizing I'm part of this creation. God's loving me right now. And just letting yourself experience that, soaking that in, even if it's just 15 minutes, 5 minutes. Or maybe it's as simple as opening up your refrigerator and looking at all the food on the shelf and stopping and scanning through it and realizing God is providing food for me to eat. There's his love right here in that bottle of ketchup, right here in that head of lettuce. He's taking care of me. God is present even in my refrigerator. God wants us to know that we are his child in whom he takes pleasure. Will we pay attention? Because he's created the most intimate arrangement possible, hasn't he? The very air in God's chest has been breathed into our souls. And he has trusted himself with us, with everything he has, because he loves us. And getting in touch with that is a huge deal in our lives. So this is such a beautiful start to our story. We are created to be with our happy, good, and powerful God in his world. But then, you know, we read on in Genesis 3, the classic story we all know, Adam and Eve and the apple. We know this story so well, and the deal with them eating this apple wasn't so much that they just wanted to try something, experience an apple for the first time, and then, dang it, God punished them for it. But it was more about them forgetting who they were. Remember, God breathed into them, and he said, my spirit is in you, so you'll look like me. Depend on me, and my love will help you do everything. They forgot that they needed God's love to do it all. And by eating that apple, it's basically them saying, I don't want to just be with God. We want to try out being our own gods. And the apple is just a move in the step of taking on that power of being gods apart from his love. And they basically said, we don't need you. We don't need to be connected to you like the Father, Son, and Spirit are. We want to do our own thing. So they broke that connection. They broke that allelon that kept that love flowing in them, which was the source that helped them treat each other well and take care of the world well. And they went and started worshiping these silly metal and wooden statues instead. And God watched them and said, you've forgotten who you are. Stop focusing your life on things other than me. Don't you see you become like the things that you make your life about? People are supposed to look at you and know what I'm like through you. They're supposed to know my love by just experiencing life with you. And now you've started looking like these dumb things that you worship, these things that you worship for your own gain, who don't care about you. And without being connected to my love, you've been acting like jerks. You push each other down. You destroy each other. You destroy the world around you. You're supposed to be for each other, not against. And oh my goodness, this part of the story is so sad because we still see it happening, don't we? In our own lives. Do you guys see the ugliness? And how many of us have had a fight, maybe even just this morning? How many of us have had words on the tips of our tongues that we knew would just slice the person we're talking to, and we let those words just tumble out and cut them to the core? How many of us have intentionally not welcomed the new guy? How many of us have laughed when others were hurting? How many of us have been the one laughed at? How many of us have been disgusted at a friend's good fortune, pretended to be happy for them? Who has seen a need and felt justified ignoring it because it wasn't our problem or we didn't cause the mess? I was just thinking about how sometimes I complain or criticize people just to feel better about myself, just because I'm insecure. Or on my really low days, I think about people who have hurt me, and in my head I have these scenes where I just rip them to shreds. Because even my stupid pretend revenge somehow feels good. We are a mess apart from God's love. Community takes a serious beating without his love. And listen, we may not worship statues and temples, but all of us have our hearts just wrapped around things that we are trying to juice the life out of. Things that we think will give us the good life. Making money, becoming beautiful, being in charge, avoiding conflict, being safe, being successful, being smarter, pleasing people, being unique, being right. And God is right. We end up looking like the things that we're consuming. And the path is often filled with fear and shame and anger. And every day we see ourselves and others doing and saying things that never were intended to be what we were to say and do, that don't look like the God that made us, that we're supposed to reflect, our intelligent, joyful, generous God. So allow ourselves to pay attention to this stuff in us, what's coming out of us and where we're reaching to for life. And one little clue of how to notice this is that when that thing that we're trying to squeeze the life out of, when it's threatened to be taken away from us, our money, our success, our body image, you'll notice that we panic inside. Like, ooh, our precious, it's getting taken away. Notice that feeling inside of you and tell somebody about it. And talk to God about it too. So what does God do with this mess? He could have squashed them all and started all over. And he has the power to do that. He could squash us if he wanted. But part of God's one anothering heart is that he does not stop being about the other. He promised he was for us. And so over history, over and over, we see throughout the Old Testament that the story then becomes about God setting people aside over and over and rearranging them to him, inviting them back to him over and over, so that everyone around the world can look at these people and say, oh my goodness, they look like an incredible God. We can tell that his life is in them. Look at the way they treat each other. Look at the way that they do life. But of course, over and over, all throughout history, those same people that God keeps collecting and rearranging to himself, they keep turning away and being about other stuff. And this goes on and on throughout history. Him giving himself to these people, and the people keep turning away. And basically, we just keep choosing things other than his love. But then this very important story, part of the story happens. And we all know this part of the story, but it's a big deal. Jesus arrives. And it's not just the big part is that he died and was resurrected, though that's huge. Because when he arrives, he does life in a very different way. Because remember, Jesus is part of the inner circle, the Son and the Spirit and the Father. And when he comes with this mission. He gets to be the one who truly looks like God because he is God and does everything that God does and speaks. And by sending him, God is basically saying, I'm going to send my Son to be the most perfect example of what my life and love look like in community. It will all rest on him to get it right, to show them what my life is like. And he does this while we humans were still a mess. Jesus comes into the mess and he says, they are broken and they are never going to get out of this on their own. But we plan to love them forever. And we plan to have them in our circle with us forever. They are made to live in our alleylon, which means that I, God, will have to enter into their world and redeem what it means to be human and redeem them in the process. And Jesus does it. He starts living among the people, and God's just pouring out of them, out of him, and he begins to one another with people. And of course, they're flabbergasted because he's doing things like honoring and respecting women when they've... Any man of authority, that was a strange thing for that to happen in that culture. Paying attention to children, healing children, He showed them what God thinks about pain and disease by entering into people's lives and just giving away healing. It didn't matter what your reputation was or where you were from or how sick you were, he would touch you, even if you had a contagious skin disease. He would feed people. He constantly was just gathering people to eat with him, no matter if they were cool or uncool. And he gave his attention and thoughts and questions and words to the ordinary, the people who normally weren't given the time of day. He spoke words of encouragement and hope. He was thoughtful and peaceful and trustworthy and happy. It's hard to imagine Jesus happy sometimes, isn't it? And he's showing them that God's life is still alive and that it's right here, right in front of our faces to be given away. And he stands up and he tells stories to people like this one in Luke 15. He says, there once was a woman who all she had to her bank account, and she didn't even have it in a bank, she held it in her house, was $50 bills. And one day she notices a dollar bill is missing and she panics and spends hours, you know, sweeping under the couch and looking behind the fridge and rummaging through all the trash. And at the end of the day, she finds the missing dollar crumpled in a corner. She grabs it and runs across the hall, knocks on her neighbor's door and says, I found the dollar. And they high-five and celebrate. Or he says, imagine there's a man who has a chicken coop. He goes out in the morning to feed his chickens and he notices that one is missing. And he spends the day walking up and down the alleys, looking in backyards, looking for piles of feathers, trying to find his chicken. And he finally sees it huddled under a tree, and he grabs it, he brings it home, puts it in the coop, and celebrates that his chicken is back. And Jesus is saying, goes on to explain, that the missing dollar and the missing chicken is actually us. And that he's come with a message that God passionately loves us and will go after even one of us. Because even though we're just one person, and even though we've been distracted and addicted to these other things, that we are meant to live in his circle, in his community of love. And when we are found, when we connect again with the source that we've always been made to connect to, all of heaven will celebrate. And we will begin to actually love again like we were made to. And people listened to Jesus and wondered, what in the world? Could he really be talking to me? Does God really love me? I'm not that special. I'm not that smart. I haven't been that religious. I've been actually pretty bad. But Jesus was making himself clear that this wild force of love was on the move. And if we wanted, we could now turn and experience it again with him. That Alelon was at people's fingertips. That anyone who wants can enter into the love and life of God again. Anyone. That's the rule. In fact, there isn't a person who could walk into these doors of the Cloquet Vineyard and wouldn't be included in that invitation. Nothing disqualifies you. And this very invitation rippled throughout Israel, where Jesus spoke these things and did these things, and it continued past his death and resurrection, and into the first Christian churches in history. And we see it in that church in Corinth where Paul wrote that letter that had that word Alelon in it. And he's reminding them of this because he knew that if they could take hold of this one anothering life with Jesus, their church would thrive. And that church in Corinth had a lot of messes. And they were taking each other to court. There were sexual problems in the church. They were picking favorites in leadership and on and on. And instead of guilting them into being better people or kicking out the problem people or pretending like the problem wasn't that big, Paul looks at them and reminds them of the same history we've been talking about today. And he says, you want to know what you're made to look like? It's about looking like the God who made you and living out of his love. Being patient and enduring and sacrificing and forgiving each other. You belong to each other just like the Son and Spirit and Father do, and we belong to him. You are this communal Alelon life together because you're connected to him. And Paul knew that as they reconnected to that source, that outsiders would look at that church in Corinth and see something amazing. They wouldn't have to wonder what God looked like because they would see him in the church there. And they would see what Allelon does to a church. Churches like this Cloquet Vineyard. With God breathing his life into us, you guys, this is becoming a community where business competitors share their secrets with each other and root each other on and bless each other. Where folks who have money and folks who have to depend on food stamps respect each other, give to each other. Where people can share honestly about really hard things and not be judged but be welcomed like family. Where people can resolve differences without letting go of friendship. Where we would see forgiveness where nobody would anticipate it. Where your ex can walk in and you can do life harmoniously together. And folks in Cloquet and Carleton could look at what's happening in this church and see something that you can't see anywhere else in the normal world. That an odd, crazy community of longtime Christians, seekers, newbies, men, women, poor, well-to-do, folks with clean records, folks with criminal pasts, every socioeconomic, gender, racial boundary coming together as a new people of God and saying, we are going to live the life our God has, the one anothering life, right here, because we are learning to be in on his life. And his love will radically be in that. We are more than chums here. We are more than attenders of the same church. We are more than small-talking Facebook friends. We actually belong to each other. Even when we're opposites, even when we're so-called enemies. And it's because of our roots, the Father, Son, and Spirit, asking us to join in on their love. And the Holy Spirit, right here, right now, wooing us gently to live this life of love together. Why don't you guys stand up with me? So, I think first and foremost, what I really just long for us is to take hold of this love together more and more. I mean, it's a lifetime process to take in God's life and love for us, but we do it in small ways, in small practices every day. And so I want to do something that might seem a little strange, but it's just a small exercise that we can practice right now where we can actually experience his love for us personally right now, which is that's the thing that makes all the difference in this. So, it's a very simple exercise, and it probably helps if you'd like to maybe close your eyes. Just imagine that you're alone. Imagine that you're in a really just calm, tranquil place. Maybe in your head, you're in the woods. Maybe you're on your porch, your favorite chair. Maybe by the water. Just let yourself imagine yourself in that place, just serene. Take a deep breath. And then next, allow yourself to feel God's presence there. Right there in that spot. There's no right or wrong way to experience his presence. And maybe you just kind of sense it in the breeze. Just a peace there. Or maybe you actually picture him sitting in the chair next to you. He's right there. Now imagine him speaking directly to you. Calling you by name. If you're a woman, you're hearing him say, "You are my daughter, and I so love you. I am so pleased with you that you're alive on this earth. So glad I made you." And if you're a man, you might hear him say, "You are my son, whom I love. I am so proud of you. So pleased that you've been created to live with me on this earth." And then sense, if you can, God just looking directly into your eyes as he says these words. And don't turn away your gaze. Don't resist his voice. Just allow yourself to be in his presence. So let him love you. So let that just keep going on inside of you. And if you felt just a block or numbness or resistance, we would really love to pray for you about that and just ask God to just open up some ways to experience his love more. And secondly, as we are people moving into learning how to love like him in community, we usually run into some walls because we've been hurt in community. We have mistrust and fear, maybe even some cynicism. We've been manipulated. So right now, if you will, let God kind of dial up if there's any resistance in you. Anything that makes you nervous about really intense community. Any fears. Maybe past experiences that make you nervous. Things that have been said or done. So this is an opportunity for him to begin going to those places and for him to provide his love and healing in those spots that we've always needed. So as we keep connecting, I'm going to ask the ministry team to come on up. And as you guys are sensing things, like maybe God bringing things up, absolutely come and get some prayer. And this is actually part of the beauty of community, us coming together and going to Jesus together for his heart. So don't be afraid. Come on up. Get some prayer from folks. And as we do that, I just want to pray one thing over us. Jesus, I just ask that you would unleash just more of your love in this family right here. And God, would you warm our hearts to the life you have, the life of togetherness, of one anothering. And Jesus, I ask that right now you would begin just gently loosening up things in us that have just been stomped on in community. Loose up that fear, Jesus. The mistrust. Even fear of leaders. Fear of being honest with each other. Fear of putting our necks out. He has forgiveness for us. Yeah. He has courage. And he has even supernatural kindness and care to put in us for people that we're not sure we want to care about yet. is let him come. And Jesus, would you release even ideas for these guys, like really practical things of how they move deeper into community. Maybe it's having dinner together with people here. Maybe it's just small group. Serving. And there are just a couple more very specific things that popped in my mind earlier this morning that I wonder if Jesus is just putting his finger on for somebody or a couple people in this room, just because he cares so much about us. And he sometimes delivers these really personal invitations because he wants to do something personal in our lives. I felt like there might be somebody here who is suffering from eczema. And it seemed like maybe in the back of your neck, in your ears. Jesus wants to heal that, cares about it. And then secondly, I just got a picture of a guy, I think, who it seems like your bills are adding up. Like you're starting to feel some stress. You're not quite making your bills anymore. And on top of that, all the things, the gadgets and machines you have are breaking down, and you're doing your best to keep them running. And actually, the picture I got was this snow blower, and it's old, and you're trying to replace pins and making it work still, but you just, like, you're running out of resources. And it's not just in your bank account, but on the inside, like, you just feel stretched and stressed and alone in it. And Jesus wants to provide for you. And it's not just the money thing, but he wants to, like, just provide for your heart, for you to know that he's with you, that he takes care of you. You're not just to take care of your life on your own. So if those two specific things are you, oh, man, please come get prayer. Jesus wants to do more in your life with that. And if any of those things, if you feel a pull towards community and wanting more of this love stuff, man, come and get prayer too. Jesus is just going to do more. Thank you so much for coming here today and being part of this community. I'm so grateful that you guys are here.